for argument this morning is Fleming against Astru. Mr. McGovern.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brian McGovern, and I represent the claimant in this case, Carol Fleming. The issue in this case is whether or not Ms. Fleming is entitled to a closed period of Social Security disability. Any other issues in this case are merely the means to that end. That is, did she meet a listing at Step 3 of the five-step sequential analysis? Or was she employable between the period of June of 2005 and February of 2008 under Step 5 of the sequential analysis? As to the latter, I believe that the administrative law judge in this case did not see the trees through the forest. The forest is that Ms. Fleming had 12 separate inpatient hospital stays between July of 2005 and July of 2007 that totaled to a total of 74 days in the hospital. And I don't think it's hard for us to imagine that she would have been having problems both before and after her inpatient hospital stays.
What was the longest time when she was in the hospital?
17 days.
No, but we have this one-year issue, too, so have you...
That's correct. Under the definition of disability, one must have a disability that has or is expected to last 12 months. And she was had one of her inpatient hospital stays, the maximum was 17 days. The bottom line here is that she was not employable due to her these multiple surgeries and multiple inpatient hospital stays because she was unable to engage in substantial gainful employment. No employer would put up with that level of absenteeism. I think that's common knowledge. And quite frankly,
Your problem on that, counsel, is that what you think is common knowledge is not what the vocational expert testified to. And the ALJ accepted that testimony. Your argument here has to be that that's not substantial evidence. Your impression about common knowledge doesn't cut it in an administrative review case. So why would the express testimony of the vocational expert not provide substantial evidence?
The vocational expert concentrated on the judge's hypothetical question regarding her residual functional capacity. And I would submit to you that when you look at, and that incidentally takes place at step five of the sequential analysis. And step five simply calls for whether or not a person is employable given their vocational profile, that is their age, education, work experience, of which the residual functional capacity is just one aspect of that. One's residual functional capacity does not in and of itself call for a conclusion of disabled or not disabled. Obviously, a person need not be bedridden to be disabled.
This case was not decided under the grids. You've just observed that there are problems here that made the grids inapplicable, but we had testimony from a vocational expert. In order for you to prevail, you have to show that that did not provide substantial evidence. That's what I was trying to get you to discuss.
Well, I don't believe that the administrative law judge had substantial evidence, nor the district court to affirm that, given that although there was testimony of her residual functional capacity, that is, she could lift 10 pounds frequently, she could walk 2 hours, so on and so forth, given that step five also calls for whether or not she is employable or not. And a person would not be employable if they are going to have the amount of absenteeism that she had. Also, I think it is axiomatic that when we are asking for a closed period, we look back in time. And when we look back in time, we have the certainty of what the actual facts are as opposed to looking forward. At the hearing in this case, and when the judge is giving the hypothetical as to residual functional capacity evaluation and the vocational expert is testifying accordingly, we are necessarily looking forward. But in this case, since we are seeking a closed period, we can look back, and it is an actual fact that this woman was in the hospital for a total of 74 days over 12 periods, and during this entire period of time, apart from her infections and her having an open wound in her abdomen, which I'm sure no employer would have hired her, is that gives us the benefit of that hindsight.
So you're asking us to just take it at, on the end and then look back and say an employer after, what is it, 4 years or something? What's the period of time we're talking about, the closed period?
From June of 2005, her date of onset, until February of 2008, when the first medical record in the record shows she did not have an open wound in her abdomen.
So was that 3.5 years or so?
Yes.
Yeah. And so what you're saying is at the end of 3.5 years, we should look in hindsight and say if an employer knew then, knew then what he knows now, she would not have been employed, or nobody would employ her. But I think what's the problem is that interim, she's always hoping to improve and get well with each stay in the hospital, I presume. And so I think what the VE said is that there were stages of time and that she was employable and that she could work. And that's where I get back to the 1 year. It's maybe a crummy law, but that's...
It is true that the vocational expert, based upon the residual functional capacity provided to her by the judge, and admittedly in the record, that she was, as far as the residual functional capacity goes, was capable of performing sedentary work. But the vocational expert nor the ALJ addressed the issue of her absenteeism or her ability to be gainfully employed in any respect whatsoever. And indeed, I will submit that due to the fact that the Social Security process by its very nature is non-adversarial and more inquisitorial, that the administrative law judge not only has a duty to identify specific listings at step 3 and articulate his reasons for accepting or not accepting them, the administrative law judge also has a duty to find whether or not this claimant was entitled to a closed period. This burden is on the administrative law judge. I quite frankly do not see in this case where it is particularly a case of whether or not we agree or disagree with one's residual functional capacity and the claimant's, or excuse me, and the VE's testimony as a result. And I would conclude that the administrative law judge decision is completely silent as to the closed period, and his findings as to the listing is completely perfunctory. Thank you. Now I've reserved my time.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, Mr. McGovern. Ms. Steiner.
Good morning, Your Honors. Rachel Steiner on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. May it please the Court. As the District Court found, substantial evidence supports the administrative law judge's decision. This case is about a wound infection and multiple surgeries and the extent to which they affected plaintiff's functioning. Plaintiff has raised two arguments. The first is a listing argument, and the second is that her functional limitations were disabling. With regard to the first argument regarding the listings, as an initial matter, we submit that argument has been waived. There was no such argument before the district court.
Would you speak a little slower and a little louder?
Absolutely. I apologize.
Some words.
There was no argument before the district court with regard to the listings, so we submit that argument has been waived. The district court judge specifically noted that there was no such argument before the district court.
Let me just ask you, do you know whether the discrepancy between able to lift up to 5 pounds and able to lift less than 10 pounds changes the number of jobs available to her?
I don't. The finding was, 10 pounds or less than 10
right.
pounds. I guess I can't squarely answer that question. That wasn't the finding. I don't know that that's significant in terms of the regulations.
Speak up a little bit, please. I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
I'm so sorry. The regulations, you know, require occasional lifting of up to 10 pounds and lifting much smaller items. With regard to the functional limitations, you know, there's this question of plaintiff submits there were all of these surgeries and all of, you know, over an ongoing period. If you look at the record, there was an initial surgery in July of 2005, followed by several surgeries and several periods of hospitalization through May 2006. As of June 2006, however, plaintiff's own treating physician proffered an opinion that was consistent, you know, at least with the limitations of light work. The doctor says, you know, she can sit and stand and walk. She might have some difficulty with lifting and carrying. Likewise, the state agency physician opined that she had functional limitations consistent with light work. Thereafter, in 2006, there are two relatively brief hospital stays. I think one was a week and one was about a day. And not until 2007, more than a year after the March 2006 hernia surgery, there's another hernia surgery.
Counsel, you're fading out again. If you would raise your voice, it would help all of us, I think.
Absolutely. I apologize. So there's not this, you know, this ongoing period through March 2008, as plaintiff suggests. You know, by June 2006, the only medical records on point suggest limitations consistent with light work. The ALJ ultimately found limitations, even greater limitation, consistent with sedentary work. And with regard to plaintiff's statement that February 2008 is the first time that we see any evidence of improvement, that's just not consistent with the objective evidence, which begins to show in 2006 that the wound is healing, it's healthy, it's clean. There's a treatment note as of September 2006 that the plaintiff can engage in activity as tolerated. After the April 2007 surgery, she was discharged with temporary limitations that were consistent with sedentary work, consistent with the RFC finding. And plaintiff reported to one of her treaters in September 2007 that as of June 2007, the wound had closed. So that's, that's not... That position doesn't square with the records in the administrative record.
You mentioned that the closed period, the ALJ didn't focus on the closed period as opposed to just the disability. Is that correct?
I don't believe so. The ALJ focused on all periods of time from the alleged onset date through the date of the decision. That's what the decision says expressly.
So presumably she's okay now. Or since that date, whatever the end of the closed period.
Well, I think disabled,
in other words.
Well, at any time through prior to the supposed closed period and through the date of the decision.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions, I ask that the commissioner's decision be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. McGovern?
I'd like to return to the issue of that Your Honor raised with regards to the VE's testimony. The judge had provided the vocational experts with a series of hypotheticals, which is standard practice. One of the judge's hypotheticals was that, given the claimant's age, education, work experience, and because of fatigue and body pain, that they could not work 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, or at the level of substantial gainful activity, would this individual be disabled, or would she be able to work? And the VE said no. So this is not a case of where we are disagreeing with the VE's findings. The VE simply testifies as to the the hypotheticals that the judge gives them. It's the administrative law judge who asked a hypothetical that the VE testified she was disabled, and it was then the administrative law judge who utterly failed to consider whether or not she met a listing. And incidentally, I do not believe that one can waive a right that they do not possess. That is the administrative law judge has to do that. And also, the judge did not address the issue of a close period whatsoever. And therefore, we would ask that this court find that the claimant be disabled under my prayer for relief. If there's no further questions, I'll rest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. Our next case for argument is Sessa again.